Google, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 131 of The Bugle, the chosen audio newspaper of the great and famous, including John F. Kennedy, Charles Dickens, Martina Navratilova, Leonardo da Vinci, and Buddha, according to a recent computer simulation. When I say computer simulation, I mean me typing those words into my computer.
Uh-huh.
Issue 131, John, it's the week beginning Monday the 18th of October. I am Andy Zaltzman, the new voice of Chanel here in London. The new city of Chanel, London. Do try out its new fragrance, Musk of the A40 in Acton, made with real exhaust fumes from the A40, the famous northwest heading trunk road. And with me, in voice, if not in body, or in spirit, it's the new face of Chanel, the new body of Victoria's Secret, and the new poster boy of mixed martial arts. It's John Tick Tick Boom Oliver!
Andy, I would love you to be the voice of Chanel. That yeah. scent sounds intoxicating.
You smell lovely, Pat.
Andy, we are 5 games into our fantasy football league at the Daily Show.
All right, mate.
And the British Bulldogs are a respectable 3 wins, 2 losses. That counts for nothing, though, next to the fact that 2 weeks ago, I had to play Rob Riggle's team, the West Coast Twice Pipes. And it was a game I simply had to win. And I did win, Andy. I stomped on him like a bug. And I've been phoning him every single day since. And leaving abusive messages along the lines of, f*** you, Riggle. Riggle, you better get a pregnancy test because you just got f***ed by a bulldog. And, Riggle, we can keep doing this for days, weeks, months, even years, but I will find you when you will answer to your humiliation. You know, that kind of thing. Then finally, I got this message, Andy. Okay.
Hello, you
f***ing
piece of shit. It's Mr. Fantastic, the one with the big f***ing muscles. The one that isn't afraid of shit. One that'll crush you in the goddamn powder. Do you understand me, you slut jaw piece of French garbage? I'm not about to get on a plane to go to Alaska. That's where men go to handle their fucking business. Shit, someone's calling me. You just got a rebate on your life, bitch.
That is an angry man.
So, it's the week beginning Monday, the 18th of October, which means it is the Bugle's 3rd birthday. And as we record, on this day, 3 years ago, the world stopped. It scratched its ear, it said,
"Yep, what was that?
Was that? It walked on a few yards, it muttered, what was that? It was definitely something. It's kind of a funny noise, it sounded like liquid truth splattering into a sandpit of lies. Oh, well. And the world walked on a bit further, and then it said, holy f***ing shit! That's the Bugle! First ever edition! I'm going to have to reassess everything. So that's what happened 3 years ago. We'll be holding the full official birthday celebrations in the feature section this week, so do save your party poppers and ask photocopying, or whatever people do at birthday parties these days, until later. I should clarify that before Matilda's 4th birthday in January. But it's time to introduce our special birthday guests, lodging it up as we speak in the soundproof safe. We have, to celebrate the Bugle's first birthday, the Pussycat Dolls. Long-time Buglers is all of them, particularly Sporty and Baby.
That's not... doesn't matter.
What?
It doesn't matter.
What, mate?
It doesn't matter. I'm not even going to pick you up. It's fine.
Really?
Okay. Yep, it's fine. Yep.
Also in there with the dolls, the French rock legend Jean-Michel Jarre. Getting pretty spectacular in there. The Nobel Prize-winning scientist Sir Harold Kroto. The accidentally drafted 8-year-old linebacker for the San Diego Padres, Petula Skloot. I think they'll be looking to trade her next summer. She's been a waste of money. The fashion designer Madeleine Albright. Well, she dabbles. And a very special soundproof safe guest. The ex-Bugle producer and former Scotsman, Tom Wright.
Hello, Buglers.
He's escaped!
What?
Shit! From the sand.
Shit!
Who the put the lock on the safe?
Get the lid back down before Petula gets
the
out.
First ever man to escape from the soundproof safe. Is everyone else okay in there, Tom?
They are. They are enjoying a very easy time.
Enough nibbles.
It's nice how you treat your former employees, though, I have to say. Yeah.
just be careful. Don't let Sporty Pussycat Doll get out.
Welcome back, Tom.
Yes,
back
welcome,
one
Tom.
Week only.
Hello. Buglers, hello.
Back in the Northern Hemisphere. Back the right way up.
It's so weird.
Have you got a message for Chris?
Well, I was going to say hello, John.
This
how are you?
I want a message for Chris
Paul.
First.
Hello, Andy.
No, tell
f*** you, Chris.
Got him!
Now,
well, you!
Oh, double f***ing! It's producer tennis. It's like the Cold War all over again. Like, swear you.
This is healthy. This is healthy. Let's
I've
get
lost
it out.
Count of how many f***s I'm supposed to write down.
I'm in America now, so this just seems like good therapy. This is just primal scream. Let's talk it out.
But Beaglers, hello. I do return from Australia, and I do need to formally endorse Chris as the proper producer of the Beagle.
Oh, there you go. We should have done this at the start. Proper right. succession.
It has been done properly. Chris does have a little blooded bugle ensign on his forehead.
Yes.
He does now. And I am formally drawing a halt to the FU, Chris. Chris, right. formally.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Beaglers, leave him alone.
It's not going to run deeper than that.
Bugle You're, runs deeper than
you,
hatred.
You think you control this, Tom? You've unleashed a vitriolic army that you are no longer in charge of.
That's right.
I have to say, I wasn't the person who started the campaign to bring me back.
Really?
No, because that would just be silly.
Yeah. Well, this is Bugle 131, the week beginning Monday the 18th of October, meaning it is 143 years since America treated itself to a little present, Alaska. At a cost of $7.2 million.
Not
they
bad.
Bought it off Russia, which means that Alaska is worth roughly the same amount as the final one-year contract of ex-New York Mets closing pitcher Billy Wagner's Major League career. And the similarities don't end there, John. Billy Wagner was, until 2009, owned by the Russians. He is home to an extraordinary and delicate ecosystem and contains major oil reserves that could lead to his torso becoming fought over by oil giants and environmentalists for decades to come. Poor Billy Wagner. All he ever wanted to do was throw some balls. And as always, in the Bugle, we have a section going straight in the bin. This week's section of the bin is the Safe Tantrum section. Advice on how to lose your potatoes in an effective, rewarding, cathartic but responsible way, including reviews of the latest padded soundproof cubicles that can be fitted discreetly into most average-sized living rooms and kitchens to help diffuse those simmering family rows. We review the Furitech Paddy Box, a snip at just £499, or $699 for American customers, complete with high-definition ExasperCam, so you can relive your favourite tantrums after you've calmed down. We also review the leading anger accessory maker Temper Temper's new Krakatoa Erupto Huff, complete with electronic Perspex Volcano on top that glows increasingly brightly depending on the amount of wrath generated within. And at the luxury end of the market, the latest personal anger gym from Hissy Fit. Get a full-body aerobic workout and huff off those extra calories with every tizzy in the apoplectic pod. It includes a vacuum-driven safe glass shatter sink for you to smash glassware, crockery and vases without risk of injury or even having to clean up after your irascible mess afterwards. Plus a new feature, the Peak Peeker, a small triple-glazed window so friends and loved ones can safely enjoy watching you chucking one full out without hearing and being lastingly offended by what you're shouting about them. Every full-blown paroxysm is the equivalent of a 10-kilometre run, and even a mild grouch does your body as much good as a set of tennis ending 6-4. The Apoplectipod is fully lined with bright red padded leather for both comfort and rile enhancements, and is also proven to reduce divorce rates by up to 0.4%. Comes with a complimentary pair of Irassi Glove knucklets, so you can punch the walls without risk of unsightly grazing, and a personally customizable paroxysm planner, so you can schedule your outbursts of bile around your other social and work engagements, all for an infuriatingly expensive £8,995. Plus, for those new to tantrums or struggling to get fully riled up about anything, we have a 5 Steps to Fury guide from one of Britain's leading umbrage-taking experts, Frank Redface Sklatten, the director of Frenzy at the top placidity therapist's Psychologica Boom. That's in the bin. That is in the bin. Before we started recording here, I met Chris and Tom for a couple of glasses of sherry in Gordon's wine bar.
I think that's obvious, Andy. I think that's obvious.
It's been a few words. I haven't made that full journey from throats to
this
microphone.
This is the first time. You should be breathalyzed back there. You're sozzled, Andy. You can't speak.
He had had half a glass of Madeira before he poured it on me.
That is true.
I've never really seen anyone look after such a small amount of alcohol get so aggro.
It's a Jewish thing. Dates back to that, the Egypt days. Oh, I should point out, for the third Bugle birthday, Chris brought in a lovely little cake with the words "F*** you Buglers" written on it. So I don't know if you want to factor that into the way you address them in future emails.
Just, The peace talks were just underway, Andy. That does not help.
F*** you, Bugler's written on it. So can I tweet that picture, or do I have to like bleep out the kind of visually bleep out?
Put a knife through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we could do some creative knife work.
It's a lovely gesture. That's I mean, it's not as good as the cake that the people at our old studio made for us on our first birthday.
Yeah, I know.
Just so you know that.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't even thinking that I could be as good as them.
Oh, good.
I knew that I could never live up to anyone that had been in my path, but I just, you know, I still
so
thought
very
I'd contribute.
Didn't try.
No, that's correct, John. That's absolutely correct.
Right. To back up Chris here, I know how much that studio got from us over the years.
So yeah.
They should have been a special
cake. Is the least they could
Yeah.
Okay, John. Let's get this thing started.
Okay. Top story this week, shocking outbreak of good news. Andy, I can't remember the last time that we got to lead with a piece of unconditionally good news, something that could unite the world around an undeniably happy event.
I can remember that time, John.
Was it the last time that Silvia Berlusconi got smashed in the face with a ceramic cathedral, Andy?
Well, I think actually that might be it. I was thinking of when George W. Bush left in that helicopter and 2 million people flipped in the birds.
I think Berlusconi getting smashed in the face was more recently.
Yeah,
but this event, and I can't believe I'm saying this, may have been even happier. The good news is that each of the 33 miners who've been trapped 2,000 feet underground in Chile for 70 days have been rescued safely and returned to their rightful home of not being 2,000 feet underground. In fact, the only way I believe this could possibly have been happier was if the miners were brought up one by one and there was a ceremonial smashing of Silvia Berlusconi in the face with a ceramic cathedral each time. But that's just too much happiness, Andy. The human brain cannot handle that level of undiluted delight.
Well, that's right. That's why they had to wear the dark glasses, isn't it? Because they've been underground for 10 weeks without any natural light. So they had to wear dark glasses. And they also had to be shielded from having a little cathedral to smash Silvia Berlusconi in the face with. Because after 10 weeks... Without even having that as an option, that could have been too much for them.
Yeah. Obviously, the first question facing us as a species was, well, you know, this is a moment of pure joy. How can we, both collectively and individually, how can we ruin it? And, well, you know, first, we could create a media circus at the entrance to the mine shaft so spectacular in size and so aggressive in nature that it risks driving the miners straight back underground. Literally, the first miner comes up in the cage, sees the hullabaloo and says, take me back down. Trust me, guys, this is just not worth it. There's a good reason, though, why everyone got so carried away with this story. It is so infrequent now that a potentially tragic news story has an uplifting ending. Tragic events are so lazily derivative in their heartbreaking payoffs. That's why, whenever there's something like Sully Sullenberger landing a plane on the Hudson or this mine story, we are hungry to savour it. People want to milk all the good feeling they possibly can. It's like we've become joy camels. We have to fill our happiness humps up whenever we can and then live off it for the foreseeable future, as we don't know when our next chance to feel good about ourselves as a species is going to be.
Yeah, well, it's a great, great story for the nation of Chile. Previously, of course, best known for that goal Marcelo Salas scored at Wembley in 1998.
Cracking goal.
What a goal. What a goal that was. And also is the country most likely to snap in half if you baked a biscuit in the shape of it. But is now renowned the world over for its capacity to rescue miners from 2,000 feet underground and provide the world with a gripping and inspiring human interest story that has given us full licence to put absolutely everything else on the back burner for a bit.
Also, let's not look at this, Andy, merely as a moment that demonstrates the human will to survive against all the odds. No, let's also see this as a huge commercial opportunity. Now, you probably noticed that each of the rescued miners came up wearing sunglasses to shield their eyes from UV rays after living in complete darkness for so long. It turns out these were actually designer Oakley sunglasses at $450 a pair that were donated by Oakley, who in return received an estimated equivalent of $41 million worth of advertising time. Now, the problem is that a profit margin like that starts to create a potentially dangerous precedent. Don't be surprised if major clothing brands are caught in the future trying to create potential disasters to showcase their goods. All I'm saying is that if a school roof caves in, trapping 500 kids, and Reebok turn up with a truckload of shoes suspiciously quickly, you will know where to point the finger.
Well, I mean, it's just, this isn't a new thing, John. I mean, think back to the end of the Second World War. You know, Hiroshima.
Yep.
big advertising for Hoggins mushrooms. You know, it's subliminal, but a lot of people just start feeling a little bit peckish.
It also makes you think that the Gulf oil spill was a huge missed marketing opportunity. Yep. Those oil-covered fish, oysters and crabs should all have been wearing tiny little Kangol hats. That ecological disaster tunity was a license to print money. Also...
It was clearly rich. The thing is, John, the rescue was rushed because there were 700 metres, roughly, of that 18-inch wide borehole that the lift had to come through with that little camera on top.
Yeah.
And by my reckoning, that could have provided space for at least 6,300 advertising logos if they'd only taken the time. Yeah. It probably would have taken another month or so, but we waited long enough as it was to stick them all to the side of the shaft. And that is a real marketing opportunity missed. And I mean, I think in this day and age, that is probably the greatest tragedy of all.
Well, furthermore, Andy, don't be surprised if Oakley sunglasses commercials have a more ominous tone in the future. Rather than a shirtless man wearing them as a woman in a bikini looks on longingly, it'll just be a single photo of a pair of Oakley sunglasses over the text, "Can you be 100% sure that you won't be trapped 2,000 feet underground in the near future? Didn't think so. That'll be $450, please."
Well, it was an opportunity missed, John. I mean, not only from an advertising point of view, but from a prank point of view. You know, if that first miner out had come out dressed as an alien or as Elvis, and his first words had been, "What year is it?" All I can remember is having that sandwich and falling down the loo.
You're right.
He's never going to have that chance again, John. Yep. He's blown it.
It's never coming back. As each miner surfaced, each had their own response to freedom. The media's instant favourite was Mario Sepulveda, who was instantly christened Super Mario after he led the crowd in euphoric chants and going on to say, "I'm very emotional. I'm going to have a drink. I'm going to drink a lot with my son, Francisco," which sounds great until you hear that his son Francisco is actually only 6 years old. But don't worry. As it turns out, Francisco can really handle his liquor. There's nothing to be worried about.
Well, you've got it in the Atacama Desert, haven't you? You've got to take a pint.
Super Mario also brought up a bag of rocks as souvenirs. And I wonder if anyone was expecting something that wasn't a rock from that bag. "I've brought you back a souvenir." "Oh, that's lovely. What is it, Mario?" "What the f*** do you think it is?" "It's a f***ing rock. I've just spent 2.5 months underground. I'm sorry, but any gift I have for you is going to be rock-based." There was not a gift shop down there.
Did you not get a little model of the Eiffel Tower? Seems a shame. But it was, of course, hugely inspiring, John. It does lead us to the uncomfortable question. Should all future sessions of the United Nations be held in collapsed mine shafts? All we need to do is trick the leaders of the world down a deep mine with the promise of a photo shoot. And you know, they just won't be able to resist that. Then you trap them in there with a little rock fall and they spend spend 2 months digging them out.
It's worth trying. Don't come back out until you've sorted everything out.
So we've seen how it brought these miners together.
Yep.
The necessity of circumstance and the human survival instinct will force the world, leaders of the world, to fix all our problems in one simple mine collapse.
That is an eerily logical point, Andy.
Now, Tom, of course, you yourself have been living in a place a long way down the earth with no discernible culture.
And massive rock.
On behalf of the people of Australia, you, Andy.
So I guess you can relate to it. Well, I can relate to it as well, because... you know, trapped underground in badly lit, uncomfortable, airless spaces for weeks on end. It's basically just, these guys have essentially just done a run at the Edinburgh Festival. But with more positive press attention.
I would point to the fact that Australia has more sunlight than, you know, probably anywhere else in the world. So it's not precisely, people do wear a lot of sunglasses, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, and it's dry.
Yeah. Yep.
And hot.
Yep. Smug, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is smug. You're right, Chris. He is. There's a kind of audio swagger to his voice now.
I just had a glass of wine after getting quite drunk with my old university friends, and I'm in no fit state to be here. So, it's a disclaimer.
It's just like the old days, eh?
It has been interesting, the stories. Apparently, at least 5 wives have been forced to come to face with mistresses whose existence had been previously kept from them by their husbands. That is not a detail that you want to dwell on for too long. It is much easier to think of these as loyal husbands and fathers, these heroic miners. One miner who's not been named has a first wife he never divorced, a live-in partner, a mother of a child that he had several years ago, and a woman who claims to be his current girlfriend, all visiting the camp. And the Red Cross said, it is a logistical nightmare trying to keep these women apart. However, I'm sure that is still one of the least stressful missions that Red Cross has been sent on. I still think you take an assignment to keep some angry Chilean ladies apart rather than heading straight for Darfur.
Well, here's a multiple choice question for you, John. Who was it that was primarily responsible for saving these miners' lives? Was it A, God, or B, capitalism?
Was it a bit of both?
Well, those are the two heroes acknowledged so far. So I think you're probably right. It is a bit of both. God, of course, rolled back the years with an absolutely classic back from the apparent dead story of hope and resurrection.
Yeah.
Still got it. Whilst in a jaunty little opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal, Daniel Henninger began his article by writing, "It needs to be said, the rescue of the Chilean miners is a smashing victory for free market capitalism."
Oh, my God. Is it in the same way that the imprisoning of those people was a huge defeat?
Well, that's it. That is the lead-off sentence. He lists the various bits of technological kit that helped bring about the rescue, developed, of course, by businesses in order to make money. Fair enough. He slightly glosses over the fact that the mining company responsible was probably cutting health and safety corners to try to keep afloat in a competitive and exploitative global marketplace. So perhaps he might like to reassess that and maybe rewrite it and say that the rescue of the Chilean miners was a score draw for free market capitalism. One all, two spectacular goals. One 25-yard pile driver of an own goal by free market capitalism to go 1-0 down. And then, well, I guess it was a classic team goal to equalise. Yeah, a bit like Cambiasso's for Argentina in the 2006 World Cup.
What a goal that was.
Overall, I guess, looking at the state of the world after free market capitalism's recent economic escapades, you've got to say it might score the odd blinder, but it still plays like an uncoordinated for far too much of the time.
Not only are the miners going to have to adjust to a normal life after the euphoria of this escape wears off, the media are going to have a difficult emotional come down as well. This has been their plaything for months now. And now, once all the crews have cleared away, they're going to have to adjust to a life where America is still fighting a war in Afghanistan and where they are expected to at least seem to try to report on it. It's amazing how quickly some people were able to move on, though. On CNN, literally just after the final miner was pulled out, Michael Moore was being interviewed on Larry King, and his first thought was, well, it's a disgrace that they could do this and that it took us months to deal with the BP oil spill. Oh, really, Michael Moore? He came out of that hole literally seconds ago. Can you not just be happy for 1 minute before poisoning the memory of this? We are joy camels, Moore, and our humps are thirsty.
Well, maybe, I mean, it could be a way of digging out the Taliban from their little caves in Afghanistan or wherever their offices are these days. You know, if you turn it into an exciting rescue mission, then they might be a bit more inclined to come out and face the justice that they deserve.
Wearing $450 sunglasses.
That's right, yeah.
That's the deal. Everyone's got a price.
We know Obama likes to look fly.
Yeah.
We know it. But what now for these miners, John? What does the future hold, other than arguing over which of them gets to be portrayed by you in the inevitable screwball comedy film about it? I mean, they're all going to be gunning for it. But there's a football match against their rescuers that has been talked about, and the Chilean president said whoever loses has to go back down the mine. So what's good to see a president with a little bit of a sense of humour. I'd prefer to see a kind of game show and see how these guys have done very well trapped underground and incredible discipline and resilience to sit it out. But let's see how they fare when they're trapped in a penthouse suite at the top of the Burj Khalifa in Dubai. They've done half a mile underground, John, but can they do half a mile in the air in a f***ing stupid building? Both in their own ways, symbols of capitalism gone mad.
Protest news now. And President Obama took part in a rally in Philadelphia this week that was significantly more rowdy than anticipated. And that was a huge mistake and a blind spot on the part of the White House, Andy. How do you not see that coming? You held the rally in Philadelphia. And nothing doesn't get out of hand there. Those people are crazy. That's a biological fact, not an opinion. If he wanted to see real mayhem, he should have said that he was rooting for the Giants over the Phillies in the playoffs. Then he'd have seen that city go batshit medieval on him. There is not a secret service in the world that could protect him from that kind of fury. He was on the receiving end of a couple of unusual incidents. First, someone in the crowd behind the stage threw a book at him. Now, it wasn't thought to be an act of aggression. A Secret Service spokesperson said the book was thrown by an over-exuberant person. It wasn't a threatening thing. The person wanted just to give the president the book. That's a great technique for getting someone to read a book, Andy. Throw it at them.
Maybe
it's a perfect recommendation.
Maybe I should have done that with my book.
Well, of course you should. Of course you should. I, for one, have a rule, Andy, that I will read any book that hits me in the back of the head. It's a personal thing. That the book and
that's why you've read the entire works of Danielle Steele.
Because you keep throwing it. The book...
She keeps throwing them.
And the book and the thrower have not been identified, short of some information that suggests that the book chucker was also the book's author, which just goes to show, Andy, how far people will go to get their book read. It seems there are two viable publishing sales strategies. One, go on Oprah. Two, throw your book at the president. And again, you know, Andy, you brought this up. I hate to linger on it. You didn't do either of those things for your book. You didn't go on Oprah, and you threw your book at a measly 0% of world leaders. Well, books don't sell themselves, you
know,
Andy.
That's true, John. I'm just saying, the Pope... You don't know what happened on that weekend in Tashkent.
The Pope was just in the UK. You don't think that wouldn't have been the perfect opportunity to beam him with your book?
He's used to it now. He just bats him off.
Even weirder was a man who streaked in front of the president during the same speech. And I mean full streak, Andy, with his big bird and his two snuffleupaguses waving in the breeze.
Snuffleupaguses?
Yeah.
Right.
That seemed bizarre enough, you know, that a man would feel...
Let's speak to a man who's recently got engaged.
Compelled.
Have you just given away your nickname?
No! It's a Sesame Street reference.
Go on.
Big Bird, Snuffleupagus.
Is that your next film?
It's statistically. If the current... Yeah,
it's better than Smurf and Two Veg, I guess.
Now, his motives were incredible. Apparently, he did this because a billionaire called Alki David offered $1 million to the first person who streaks in front of the president, providing that the streaker writes the name of his website across their chest. And he did that. You know, it was written in marker pen across his chest. Yep. He was a walking billboard. Although, as he ran naked close to the president, he may as well have drawn a target on there as well, just to give secret security something to aim at.
Well, it's a very dangerous precedent to set, this advertising stunt. Apparently, Michelle Obama is now demanding backdated payments for nudity in proximity to Barack Obama, totaling in excess of... actually, how many children have they got? Two, isn't it? $2 million.
Yeah.
I don't know if she had a web address. I don't know if she has a web address scrawled across her flouty McGrouties. Who knows? Well, I guess we'll have to wait for the next White House press briefing to find out. But ironically, actually, Barack Obama himself has a tattoo across his chest of a website.
Oh yeah.
In fact, it's got the words "I love www.olsentwins.com." Now, this dates back to an inauguration prank that went too far. Because a couple of his Republican buddies got him hammered, pinned him down, and there's a little Republican-Democrat joke. Got him a full chest tattoo saying, "I love Lenin."
Oh.
And Obama then had to change the Lenin to www.olsentwins.com in case anyone saw it and thought he was a commie. But, of course, the great irony of that, John, is that if you go to www.olsentwins.com, it's just full of Mary, Kate and Ashley... You know, their standard socialist rantings, pictures of the October Revolution with them photoshopped into it, and fashion items for teenage girls based around Lenin's beard. So,
it's been a long week. The other conditions were that the streaker must have been within eyeshot and earshot of the president, and they had to scream the name battlecam.com 6 times, and they have to be fully nude. So... tick, tick, tick. I think he qualifies there. He went on to the owners to say, "I'm on the record as saying that it needed to be done in a place where it's legal to be nude, but it's a suggestion, not a rule." Okay, so that's meaningless. So it looks like the naked guy may, under those conditions, have just got himself $1 million to help wash his brand new criminal record down with. Now, regarding the billionaire who offered this, I guess the main question surrounding him at the moment is, who is this douche? Well, Alki David is a billionaire shipping and bottling magnate who is known to carry out stunts mainly by paying others to perform them. This is capitalism at its best and worst, Andy. It's almost returning to the time of feudal kings, where the wealthy palace would pay peasants to jump around and entertain them. That's essentially what's happening here. A bored billionaire is trying to see what he can make people do for money, and it turns out to be basically anything. Alki David said...
Anyone? Anyone?
Well, yeah, go on.
Yeah, Tom. John, bit of cake? Hang on, I'll just... should come down the ISDN line.
Delicious. Try and use it to soak up the sherry, Andy.
I've got to say that's why I'm having it.
Chris?
No. I bought it. I know what it's got in it.
I was wondering why...
is it kosher?
Yeah, it's a kosher cake.
The F***y Buglers is written in something that looks like chilli sauce. I'm kind of expecting... I don't know why.
It's in honour of the miners.
Boom.
Alki David said, when I see the video and it's confirmed, it won't be a cheque that he receives, it'll be cash. Well, that's charming and even more responsible. You're going to give him $1 million in cash. Are you then going to offer to pay someone $2 million to steal it from him, as long as they're wearing a full penguin suit at the time and humming the theme to the Golden Girls at a pitch that's only audible to dogs? The incredible thing about this is that the man who did this streaking said that the stunt was not done to protest the president in any way. In fact, he voted for him in 2008. And maybe he thought to himself on that historic day, Andy, in November, that in just less than 2 years, I'm going to run in front of you with my balls hanging out for financial gain. America is changing.
Of course, they said it would never happen in our lifetimes, would it?
That, yeah.
A man would run with his balls out in front of a black president.
Yeah.
Bugle feature section now, and happy birthday, Bugle!
Happy birthday!
That's Destiny's Child, who brought in to do us a little couple of songs.
Was not cheap. Thanks, girls.
We couldn't get Marilyn Monroe. So, I don't know, our agent would let her out. But, yeah. But 3 years old today. 3 years old today.
The big three.
13, bloody hell.
And in the studio in London, the two men who've produced the vast majority of the Bugles between them.
Yes.
I've forgotten how long this goes on for, actually.
Yeah, f***ing ages.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. My bottom is hurting. Yeah. That's...
You go back to Australia, immigrant.
I'll go back to where I come from, eh?
Immigrant, bloody immigrant. 3 years old, and what an appropriate bugle it is for this historic third birthday, John. The first time in the history of the human race that a podcast involving two British comedians on opposite sides of the Atlantic has reached its third birthday.
Yes.
It's Bugle 131. And if you multiply all the numbers in 131 together, namely, for those of you listening very drunk, 1, 3 and 1, they make 3. I mean, you cannot write coincidences like that. It's like it was meant to happen, John.
Yeah.
And when I checked the Bugle Twitter feed just now, it had 9,012 followers, which is a multiple of 3.
I mean,
there is a God.
It's amazing to think of the Bugle as 3 years old now, Andy. I mean, what a world it's inheriting. It's a lot of responsibility bringing a podcast into the world. And the way things are, I'm not sure. I'd be entirely happy doing it again at this time. When this podcast was born, the economy was completely solid and it was incredibly easy to get a mortgage.
Yeah.
Almost ridiculously easy. Now, due to no connection, look at the way the world is.
Yeah.
Also, when this podcast was born, you think about how things are changing. I had absolutely no career in movies, Andy. Now, I still have no career in movies, but I have done a film. How times change.
Well, I mean, think back to 2007, and then the internet was just a distant dream in the mind of a couple of ambitious young IT whiz kids called John and Andy, separated by thousands of miles of sea. In 2007, air travel was just a luxury that could only be afforded by the super rich and those with their own personal flocks of albatrosses.
Yes.
And in 2007, there was still no cure for cacalogophobia, the fear of swearing. And I like to think we've done our bit.
That much is definitely true. And when this podcast was born, Andy, you had but one child that you delivered in the traditional modern way of letting a trained medical professional do it.
Yep.
Now you're a self-qualified midwife.
Yep.
Times change.
That's right. I've delivered 10 or 15 kids since then.
When the podcast began, England had just crashed pathetically out of the World Cup. Luckily, that was never to happen again.
And in 2007, also, then, you know, when we started, the people of Eastern Europe still lived under the oppressive yoke of the Soviet Empire. Or was it Byzantine Empire? I can't remember. It doesn't matter. They're basically the same. But now, thanks to the Bugle, those people have been freed.
Yep. You're welcome.
Yep. But it's not just that numerical coincidence, John. 131 is also the medical emergency phone number in Chile.
Oh.
In this week of all weeks. So one of those miners probably tried to phone it and then said, oh, balls, no bloody single. Single.
Single. Andy, stop drinking. Stop drinking, Andy.
Dear, this is bad, isn't it?
It's not exactly performance enhancing, I'll give you that.
Yeah. It's like the last days of Alex Higgins in that documentary, you know, when he was...
Right. I need to see
that
a lawyer.
That is exactly
if that's
what it is.
Well, I'm going for a frame of snooker after. Alex Higgins, days from death, are still got to be stronger than me at snooker.
Andy, you are the comedic Alex Higgins.
That's going on my poster. But, of course, not just the Bugle that's celebrating a birthday this week. Also celebrating a birthday, Margaret Thatcher, the celebrity former woman. She's reached the grand old age of 85.
Oh.
So much for her, this lady's not for turning speech. It turns out she was for turning. Turning 85. And I think the Bugle is very like Margaret Thatcher, John.
Do you?
Yeah. I think it is, in that it's liked by a small hardcore of a few thousand people in Britain. And it's a bit more popular in America.
And, you know, history does not yet... it's impossible to gauge quite yet just the damage that it's done.
Your emails now. This one comes in from Matt the Hat, who writes on the subject Bugle love advice.
Right.
You have come to the right place. Dear Andy, John and Chris. That's got to hurt, Tom. That has to hurt.
Tom.
What's the emailer's name again?
Matt the Hat.
F*** you, Matt the Hat.
Yeah, got him.
There you go. Yeah, Matt. Hope you enjoyed that.
There was this past August. I met a beautiful young woman from South America. Is there any other kind? Who was a student in New York and had travelled over to Edinburgh to see both your show and her brother. I hope that's in order of preference.
Yes.
I just hope she bumped into her brother on the street and said, what are you doing here? I just came to see Andy's Ultimate Show. Anyway, and we were both at one of Andy's political animal shows. Brackets review. 1 star, occasionally varying from mediocre. Thanks very much. And whilst sharing the exile of the smoker, we got to chatting. Whilst I was able to carry on a conversation at first and be politely charming, eventually... I've always thought the word charming needs an extra syllable.
Disgusting.
Charming. I mean, because charming's not that charming a word. Charming.
This would not
make
happen on my watch, Buglers.
Yeah.
Andy drinking before...
That's why you breathalysed him in and out of the studio.
I run a tight ship.
I'm the new Jim Jefferies, but more so... I hate all women! Yay! anyway. So, whilst I was... returning to the email. Whilst I was able to carry on a conversation at first and be politely charming, eventually my conversation dried up, and I lacked your obvious expertise in seducing women folk to spending more than 6 awkward minutes with me. That's enough, usually. That's enough. Got 2 kids. That's enough. After bonding over our mutual love of the Bugle, I could think of nothing else to say. That's understandable as well. I mean, what else is there to say about
the
universe?
You're done, really.
Once you've talked about that. And so, as the people who brought us together, I must ask if you could provide me with foolproof instructions and chat-up lines so that when this happens again, I shall not go in unprepared. Yours in hope, Matt the Hat.
Good question. Well, I mean, obviously, as you can tell from Andy, a little Dutch courage with some old English sherry might help.
Or not, as the case may be.
Yep. I'm probably not the man to ask. My wife and I did get together in a fairly drunken evening.
There you go.
Yeah, Yep.
Get hammered. That is what your advice is, Andy.
Yep.
That's a very British way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Your recent engagement has been the celebrity story of the last 6 months.
Yeah. I've got nothing. I think I've been proven to have zero game.
Yeah. I think John and I both, but our romantic tactics, but fortunately, proof is successful, have basically been we've gone romantically rope-a-dope.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
So, yeah, do that. Best of luck, Matt the Hat. Best of luck. And if there are any other sultry South American beauties who like listening to the Bugle and coming to Edinburgh to see my shows, then do get in touch with Matt the Hat.
Happy hunting, Matt. There's an email here from Joe with the subject Bugle to Frog Brains Conversion Ratio. Dear John and Andy, an occasional theme of emails seems to be people who listen to the Bugle while doing things that are incongruous with this activity. In keeping with this, I'd like to say that as a graduate student in neurobiology, I spent a solid 8 hours cutting tadpole brains into very, very thin sections whilst listening through the Bugle archives.
That's strong. That is strong.
That is very good. By tracing my browser history, I'm able to determine that I listened to 12 complete Bugle episodes in the time it took me to section 9 frog brains. That means that a single episode of the Bugle is equivalent to 3/4 of a frog brain. Or more shockingly, a single frog brain is equivalent to 1.33 Bugles. It's basically like Weimar Germany all over again. Furthermore, as my occasional fits of laughter nearly threaten the integrity of my lab work, I must inform you that you're at risk of halting the progress of medicine. Or you would be if my research had any medical relevance. Since it doesn't, you could be guilty of the more pernicious offence of preventing the upward advancement of fundamental human knowledge. Yours, apparently, Joe, Michigan, USA. Well, that's a great location. You know, we spoke to someone who's listens to the Bugle on the South Pole. Yep. Someone listened to it in Darfur. Guys that listen to it in Iraq. I do think a man listening to the Bugle whilst chopping up frog brains should be added to that list.
Heston Blumenthal.
Yep.
Yep. Can't beat his old frog brain risotto. So thanks, Joe. And do keep your emails flooding in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's Bugle.
That's it. Happy birthday,
happy
Andy.
Happy birthday, Bugle. Tom?
I think this Bugle has been a fair reflection of the previous 3 years.
Yep.
It has massively overrun, yes.
Yep. Yeah.
Andy's drunk.
Welcome back. Now, off back to Australia. You are fired again.
F***ing glad.
You're fired! You're fired again,
that's
Tom!
1 hour and 10 minutes of my life I will not get back.
That's right.
I'm not even getting paid for it this time.
Yeah.
I did have some nice cake, though. Thank you, Chris.
You mean you used to get paid?
Shh, Tom! Oh, Tom!
Damn it!
Chris, thank you. John, Andy,
thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Buglers.
We'll speak to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.